This is The Calling, your guide to leading modern contact centres. On the show, we'll share innovative strategies, expert insights, and success stories from industry leaders across the world. You'll learn everything you need to turn your contact centre into a strategic value centre, where interactions become memorable experiences. I'm Sean McGinn.
And I'm Arnie Ho.
Today, we're chatting with Emma Stapleton. Emma is the head of customer support at Mecca. Mecca is Australia's largest prestige beauty retailer with over 100 physical stores across Australia and New Zealand and a thriving online store.
In this episode, Emma will explain how the customer experience is influenced by the employee experience, what good employee experience looks like, and how Mecca is doing things differently. She'll also describe how she managed a rapidly expanding customer support team that grew from just 10 staff at the start of the pandemic to over 100 in under 2 years. Let's jump in.
Hello, Emma. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Emma and I have worked together before, and since then I've been tracking Emma's journey at Mecca, and it's meteoric is probably one way to describe it, but we'll let Emma talk about that. So let's kick off with that. You started working at Mecca in 2020 during the height of the pandemic. What a time to start working in a contact center. Tell us, what was that experience like?
Yeah, it was definitely wild. I had begun looking to join Mecca pre-COVID. And so when I had sort of interviewed for the role, I had heard that they were a team of 12 to 15. And I was like, yeah, great. How exciting. By the time I arrived in mid-May, in that heady time in Victoria between lockdowns where we thought we wouldn't ever have another lockdown, how naive we were. I turned up and on my third day, I realized that there were 35 people in the team. The team had tripled almost in the time between my original interview and joining the business. And now we're a team of almost 100, 3.5 years later. So it has grown incredibly quickly.
Just on that, what was your experience prior to starting with Mecca? Had you worked in contact centres before or led contact centres?
I'd actually not been in contact centres. I'd been in retail customer service teams. And I say that because I now feel strongly that there is a distinction between the two. I didn't necessarily realise that at the time, but I had been leading a team of sort of 5 to 7 people as a customer service manager for a fashion brand. And I'd been lucky. I'd had a lot of experience. When you work for smaller businesses that are privately owned, you often get access to opportunities that you don't get in bigger businesses. So I had worked on a website replatform and I had run a project that had set up a sort of manual version of Endless Aisle that had made quite a lot of money for the business and some other really cool projects that I'd gotten to implement simply by being in the right place at the right time. So when I came to Mecca, my experience that probably appealed to the business, I think, wasn't so much about the size of the team that I had led, but rather the projects that I had been exposed to. And I think it was tricky for them to find someone who had that big project experience, who also had the customer service experience. And then if I'm being really honest, I think I got very lucky about the growth of the team and sort of the time I joined and that sort of thing. I don't know that it would have grown that quickly if COVID hadn't have happened. So as much as the team has grown, I've had to grow very quickly with it as well.
What a baptism of fire.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that a little bit. So you got there, you're like, there's 35 staff. And then all of a sudden you're, what, over 100 odd staff in the 2 years. And you said you had to grow, right? So how did you manage a rapidly expanding team like that?
It was really tricky. And there are lots of lessons I learned, things that I wouldn't do again. I think the best example I would give is probably an over-reliance on adding junior resources when I should have been adding senior resources. And this is a lesson I come back to time and time again. When a business is rapidly growing and a team is rapidly growing, it can be really easy to plug in a junior resource to lead something because it costs less, it's easier to get approved, maybe they're easier to recruit, you can grab someone from inside the team to pop into that role. But ultimately, what would end up happening is that role or that new part of the team would end up taking up so much of my bandwidth because the resource I'd put into the role could really only lead the people but couldn't actually lead the strategy or the way we needed that part of the team to work. And so I've made a big reversal on that where I would much prefer to bring in a more senior resource earlier on. And oftentimes that means bringing in a leader who is used to having team leaders report to them and then direct reports and saying, hey, while you build this thing for the next 6, 12, 18 months, these team members are going to report directly to you. And then once we reach the point where we've grown this thing enough, then we'll bring the team leaders in next. And I think that was probably my biggest learning. And it's the one that when I'm talking to managers in similar positions to me, I come back to a lot because I would have saved myself a lot of time if I'd learned that a bit sooner, because it really meant I had to be deep in the detail of every element of the team. And that wasn't what was best for the team or for the customer because, yeah, I sort of have a mantra of like how much of my time should be spent on single customer issues versus every customer issues. And where I am now, it's like I really need to be spending 99% of my time on the every customer issues.
That's really fascinating. How did you realize that what was going on for you, you know, when you had to go, oh, actually, I should be hiring more, you know, senior people who are more capable and I'm getting too much in detail. Like, was there a point where you went, oh, that's what's going on here and I need to shift things?
I think there wasn't necessarily a lightning bolt moment. Like we would all love for there to be a lightning bolt moment. I think more often than not, the lightning bolt moment is actually looking back and realizing something that has been happening internally for you over the past 6 to 12 months or something. And the lightning bolt moment is just the moment you're able to actually put words to it, but you've been on that path for a while. I think there are a couple of things. We had some challenges with some team members who weren't performing in their roles. And I really had to like take a look at myself and say, have I put you in a role where you could perform to the best of your ability? What was my responsibility in this? How much of this was your skill set and how much of it was my misunderstanding of your skill set, my putting you in a position where you had to do things that I didn't have time to support you to do because I made the role the wrong role and that sort of thing. So I think no manager wants to have those situations, right? But I think sometimes they are the best ways that you learn, unfortunately, because I always want to be doing the best for my people. That's people, ultimately, that's what I love about the role is supporting people. And so, yeah, sometimes looking at those situations and being like, yeah, you're not delivering what I want you to deliver, but how have I contributed to that?
Great learning. So you've answered the next question we had about what would you do differently. So thank you, making our job very easy. So let's get into the next section. We want to talk about this concept that the employee experience is the customer experience and how interlinked those two are. And we see this play out all the time, the trade-off between EX and CX. So let's talk about that. Tell us, why do you think the employee experience is important in a contact center?
I think the employee experience is important everywhere. And I just think contact centers are like a amplified version of that. I think you see it, obviously Mecca is a retail business as well. So I see it play out in the retail space as well. But I think anywhere where you have an employee directly speaking to a customer, your employee experience is as important as your customer experience. And that's because an unhappy employee does not deliver a good customer experience at the end of the day. You can go deep on it and psychology and all sorts of things. But at the end of the day, it really does come down to if you are unhappy, if I'm unhappy and I'm walking into meetings with my colleagues, am I delivering a great experience for my colleagues? Probably not. And the same goes for team members in a contact center. If I am unhappy and miserable doing my job, what kind of service am I going to be delivering to a customer?
And what have you learned about what makes a happy employee so that they can deliver a great experience?
Look, I wouldn't say that we've cracked the egg on this. I wouldn't say that at Mecca we're delivering the best employee experience. It's still very much a work in progress. And I think one of the most difficult things about the growth that we've experienced is that it's like two steps forward, four steps back in every situation, because every time we're a little bit closer to getting to the line where we want to land something, something happens and the volume increases, and then it's like, okay, back to the battle stations and that sort of thing. But I think people want a sense of autonomy. I think that one is becoming probably the biggest issue in contact centers, because there's this, we've come out of COVID and lockdowns where people felt like they had this real sense of flexibility, and we're coming back into the workplace with different flexible work arrangements and different businesses doing different things and all of that kind of thing. And I think particularly in businesses where the contact center is just one part of the business, when they can see the way other parts of the business get to work that is different to them, I think that can be really tricky. So I know for us, we've got our support center and our team are in a building with support center team members who have a different level of flexibility because they're not working a shift, right? So if I had an appointment this morning, I can come in at 10 a.m. and work till 6 p.m. Now, a contact center team member can do that by arrangement, but they can't just do that on a day-to-day basis, making that decision for themselves. And we talk about it with the team because a lot of them for us come from our shop floor, that it's like being on the shop floor. You are coming to a shift to man the shop floor. And if you aren't there, the shop floor isn't manned. And so it's really difficult to figure out what is the right amount of flexibility to give to teams. And there is cool technology coming, but I also don't think that we've really quite gotten there with the technology to deliver the flexibility that teams are looking for. I think it's exciting. I think there's heaps happening in that space, but I think where teams would like to be is a bit ahead of where the technology is realistically at to support us with that.
So you've covered a part of what a great employee experience is, and it looks like, you know, flexibility and autonomy is really important. And I feel like you're being quite humble about talking about things that aren't going well. I think it's a progress, right? Everything is always in progress when you're dealing with any people-related type topics. What do you think really good employee experience looks like, though?
I think team members having autonomy, a team members feeling recognized and seen, feeling like the work that they do ultimately has an impact on the customer experience. And so that's not just about how I, as a team member, one-to-one have an experience with a customer, but around the things that I'm observing and learning about the business, about the way our customers respond to different things, that is then distilled and filtered into solving root causes of issues that we're seeing happen in the business, or into feedback for campaigns that we've run, or even when it's positive, how do you filter that positive thing back and be the person who gets to share that message as well? And then I think it's definitely around feeling like you have a sense of community working together. And I've always thought that in particular in contact centers, that one of the things, interestingly enough, for us in 2020, one of my biggest challenges when I started in the role was getting the team to work from home, which is hilarious to think about 3 years later, where everyone wants to work from home, right? But this team did not want to work from home, and the business couldn't understand why. And I was trying to explain to them that when you work in a contact center, in a customer service team, that it's actually incredibly collaborative, and that there is a sense of like the way you read each other's body language and everything that happens when you're in a room together in a contact center. I was trying to explain to them that you've got these team members, and obviously no one can see me, so I'm going to describe what I'm doing, but you're on the phone, right? And you're in a team and everyone's sitting around, they're on the phones and your manager's behind you and you have this customer and they're getting a little bit antsy. And so you kind of do this like half swivel of your chair, and you're still listening and talking. You're kind of looking at your manager and your manager looks at you, and then you might, things get a bit more heated, and then you do the full turn. So you're facing your manager and your manager's listening and nodding at you. And then they point at their computer and they go, and you know, they're typing and they're sending you a Teams message. So you turn back around and you read their Teams message, and then you finish up the call with the customer and you turn around. Your manager goes, "Oh my goodness, you did the best job. Well done. That was so hard." And it's like those moments are happening every day. They're happening between team members. I remember like you'd be on calls and someone would be slipping you a post-it note because they've realized they haven't had a chance to tell you this new piece of information of something that's happening. And so teams were so terrified to work from home. And now it's like everyone wants to work from home. We've allowed this level of flexibility for people to work from home, but we haven't necessarily figured out how to bring that feeling back in a way that doesn't chain our team leaders and leaders to their desks constantly monitoring digital channels for support. And so I think a really great experience creates a sense of community where there always is someone to support you, but equally still allows our leaders to behave like leaders rather than just constantly being on Teams support channels with Teams.
That's a great articulation of one of the newest problems that's facing contact centers, isn't it? That responsiveness, that acknowledgement that you lose when you're working from home, that distance, the tyranny of distance that creates that issue. I don't know if anyone's cracked that yet. I'd love to know if anyone has. I think that one, if someone can come up with a way to solve that problem, it will to capture that essence of that real-time support and the access to a leader in the moment would be, yeah, that's a big one. Very good. All right. So tell us then, you've obviously got a big focus on employee experience. And can you tell us what at Mecca, maybe what some things are that you're thinking about in terms of putting in place to improve the experience for your people?
One of the things that is really fascinating about working at Mecca, I wasn't a Mecca shopper before I worked at Mecca. In fact, I barely knew what Mecca was, which I think was probably sometimes a good thing because Mecca is this quite well-known name and it has been, you know, awarded best workplace and all sorts of things over the years. And people have a real idea and mythology of like what it means to work at Mecca and what that experience is like. And don't get me wrong, it is all of those things. It's wonderful. And yes, you are showered with lots of beautiful products and fantastic events and all of those things. But for our contact center team, that's really difficult because we don't work in a way that means that when there is all of a sudden excitingly 700 Sebi scrolls downstairs for people to go and grab one, that they can just jump off the phones and not serve our customers and go participate in that. And we can't close the contact center for a day when the Christmas party happens and things like that. And so Mecca has operated for a long time with these sort of three areas of the business, our support center, our distribution center, and our retail workforce. And one of the things that is sort of a positive step in the right direction for us in the past 6 to 12 months has been a decision that our customer care team is our workforce and it is separate and distinct from our support center workforce. And what that does is it allows us to set up the team in a way that means we deliver a like-for-like experience in a way that makes sense for the customer care team. So a great example of this is that Mecca has some incredible benefits for support center team members. So there is, I don't know how often it happens, but there's a nail artist that comes in and sits there for a day once a month or something, and you can go and get your nails done while you're in the office. And you pay for it, but it's available at the office. And there's other things like that that come up. But again, a customer care team member can't necessarily do that. But equally for my team, who are distributed across Australia and New Zealand in various states, Christchurch and New Zealand as well, not all of my team members, even if we could crack that egg, not all of my team members are located where the support center is. And in fact, more than 50% of them are. So they can't access that benefit. And so what we're going about doing is launching our own benefits for the customer care team so that they have access to something that is bespoke and unique to them. I can't say what those benefits are because we're about to launch them and I honestly just don't want to spoil it for the team. But what I would say is that we've tried to stay very focused on what we know our team needs right now. So more than ever, working remotely and working with a probably growing negativity towards customer service staff. Mental health is a big focus, but also Mecca has always, Joe, our wonderful founder, is hugely passionate about meditation and well-being and all of these kinds of things. So we've tried to make sure that what we're delivering feels very Mecca, but is delivered in a way that is accessible to all of our team members and helps them do their job as well.
I'm just imagining if my wife listened to this, how she'd be interested in going to Mecca to get her nails done.
I'm just thinking as well, post this podcast, all the flurry of inquiries into you, Emma, to come and work at Mecca as well.
In terms of measuring engagement, how do you go about doing that? or that employee experience?
Yeah, we have an employee survey, an ESAT survey that goes out. One of the things that we've done since we've agreed that customer care is a separate workforce in the business is separate that survey out from what everyone else was getting. And that's been fantastic because it means we can ask some more pointed questions around how satisfied are you with the tools that you're using? Are the improvements we're delivering working? How satisfied are you with the training you're getting? And then being able to look at that by different cohorts is really valuable as well. And we found some fascinating insights from looking at that data and seeing that actually team members who came to us externally from Mecca were more happy in their roles than our team members who came from store. And that is because our team members who came from store didn't have contact center experience, and therefore we had not well managed their expectations of what it is like to work in a contact center role. And so that data is really powerful to help us kind of figure out where are the places, especially when things are really hard, to say, you know what, maybe we can't do something right now that shifts things 50%, but maybe we can find a couple of 5% where we can tweak things and make things a little bit better as well.
That's great. And a lot of the what you're talking about sort of reminds me of the approach to CX as well. It's like try to understand the distinct needs of the different types of customers that you have. And how can you make some small, meaningful improvements to try and improve the experience they have? So it's great to hear that you're taking that approach. Are there any downsides to measuring engagement?
Yes, which is that I found that we tend to have to really push team members to participate. So it can feel like a double-edged sword, really, because on one side, if you don't push them, we get maybe 20% of the team respond. But at 20% of the team, I can't say I've got a consensus on feedback, right? And in that 20%, I've probably got 50% think one way and 50% think the other way. The other thing that I've noticed is we get a lot of my feedback has never been addressed. And often that's because you're the only person with the feedback, or maybe you're giving feedback that is really specific to your personal unique circumstances. And I can't deal with that within an anonymous survey tool. I need to know who you are in order to support you. And then on the flip side, if you really push people to respond, we get much more negative feedback because people tend to think of it as a tool for negative feedback. And so you push people and it actually makes people go like, well, what am I unhappy about? What should I be putting in here? And I think of it myself as a person who, like, I always do the survey. Obviously, I'm an employee. I do the survey. And I think about myself in the circumstances, like, I don't go in there and write a whole heap of comments. Comments are gold, right? Comments, it's the actual verbatims that are the gold that help you do things. But if I'm happy, I'm not going in there and writing a thing. I'm just being like, yep, 4-5, 4-5, 4-5, yep, bang, done. And so it can be really tricky to figure out what is the feedback that is actually the feedback and what is, I have to put something in here so I have scraped the bottom of the barrel for the thing that maybe I think is a little bit annoying.
That's really interesting. And I think that type of feedback comes through when you talk to customers too. You get that very polarized feedback when you push them into the surveys. I'll put you on the spot. Do you have an antidote to that? How do you solve the problems of engagement surveys that you're experiencing? Do you have any advice?
I don't have a cure. There is a number of things that we do that I think probably help, but they can be hard to maintain. So one is that I'm very strong on saying the feedback survey is not the only place you have to give feedback. So in every conversation where we talk about our survey is called Pulse, we talk about feedback survey, they say this is one of the channels for providing feedback. The other channels are these, you know, and listing those off. The other one is I'm a big believer in being as transparent with team as possible. Now that can be tricky, I think, particularly in contact centers and particularly in retail contact centers, because there is so much happening in terms of like customer, like campaign activity, new products, everything for team members to stay on top of, that it can feel like you're wasting team members' time having conversations with them about certain things. But I think it's really important for the big issues to say to them, here, I agree that this is an issue. These are my options. Does anyone think there's another option? No? Okay, great. these are the pros and cons of each option. Does everyone agree those are the pros and cons? Have I missed anything? Okay, great. Based on this information, it feels like our only choice is to do this one. Does everyone agree? Yeah. Okay, great. And then people have bought into that option and they understand that there isn't actually a better option. And it's, I will often say in those situations, I wish there was a better option too. I'm not picking this option because I think it's perfect. I'm picking it because we don't have a perfect option. And we all agree this is the best, not perfect option to go with. And I think just letting team members have that insight into the decision-making is really powerful, but it also sets them up for success in the future. I think the best way we learn from leaders is getting exposure to their decision-making. You know, I think about times I've asked my managers, why do you want to do it this way? And it's like, I'm not questioning the decision. I want to hear what your thought process was to get there so I can learn about how you think and think about what kind of questions I might ask myself if I was in that situation. And so I think it helps team members in two ways. One, they become a little bit more appreciative of how much thinking goes into those conversations. And two, they build their own skills for that in the future.
100% resonate with that. And I agree as well. Like, I feel like my favorite managers were the ones that would be very open about what they're assessing, what they're troubled with, and pulling in people's opinions into helping them make decisions. I'm going to shift our conversation towards CX a little bit now. In terms of CX, like, what do you think Mecca is currently doing differently to other contact centers? And it's a hard one because you're in your world, right? So it's like, what's everyone else doing? I don't know. You know, sometimes, like, I had that challenge when I was working in contact centers. So maybe it's just, what are you guys doing even?
From a Mecca perspective, just as a business, coming across having worked in other retailers and coming into Mecca, it was the first time that, you know, every business says they're customer first. Every business has a value that says that they're customer first and the customer is the center of everything and da 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 da. And we've all worked in places that say that. And then we've been like, but you're not actually. And the thing that really was apparent to me from my first couple of days at Mecca is that the customer actually was king and the customer was everything. And you could walk into a room and say that you were going to save $200,000. But if you couldn't say what the customer experience was as a result, no one was approving that plan until you could say what the customer experience would be like. And if it was really detrimental to the customer experience, no one cared about saving the money, which is really fantastic as a person running a contact center to be in a business where you genuinely care about the customer and what is impacting the customer gets results. I wouldn't say that we are, again, doing this perfectly, but one of the things that's been wonderful the past 6 months have been quite challenging for us. The business has had, you know, some projects go in and we've had really high volumes coming in from customers as a result. And what has been fantastic about that is it has really propelled a piece of work that we had as part of our customer care strategy anyway, which was about how do we deeply link the CX into the entire business? How do we make sure that the business understands that customer care are not creators of volume, we are receivers of volume? And so how do we get other teams on the hook for the volume they create? And so one of the things that we've been doing is meeting regularly with our partners, particularly in our digital teams, to say, here are the things that are driving volume. Is there anything you can do to change this? And we did this first as like a crisis talks kind of situation, 2 hours locked in a workshop. And I, funnily enough, wasn't even in the workshop. My manager, the chief retail officer, had to run it because there was something else going on that I was, another fire that I was trying to put out. But what was really cool about that was we got all of these fantastic people from digital and all of my leadership team in a room, and we just talked about every single pain point that the team were experiencing. And it wasn't necessarily the pain points that were related to what was driving the volume, because we knew that that was a longer term issue to solve, but saying, okay, we can't fix the 50%. What are all those 5% again? And so they went and looked at things and they came out of the room with 16 initiatives that they were going to do. Within a week, 8 of those initiatives had been completed, another 3 had been parked, and another 5 are being worked on in the medium term. And that was the kind of turnaround that we couldn't get done prior to the challenges we were in. And it's become this real silver lining, because since then, there have been other things that we've said, hey, this is driving this amount of volume. Could you fix it? And they go, yeah, it's a priority. And now we're making it happen. And those relationships now are building to have that kind of cycle where our feedback is meaningfully going in. And that's massive for our team, right? Being able to go back to our team and be like, hey guys, we've resolved, you know, we've worked with our partners in digital. We've been able to stop this from happening if you notice happening again. And the team love that. They love thinking, again, that feeling of like, what I notice and what I share feedback about makes a difference to our customer experience. Because our team, they care about our customer experience more than anyone does. It makes them feel sick, the idea that we're not delivering a great experience. And I think that's something really unique to Mecca, that our team are that bought into the customer experience, that they, you know, you say to them, it's okay, you don't have to focus on anything more than what's in front of you. And they're like, yeah, but my customer's been waiting for 5 days for a response. And they care about that.
The thread I'd love to pull out of that is the thing I think that you're doing differently is that proactive engagement with the rest of the business, to think of the problems that are occurring at a system level rather than just at a transactional level. And I think there's sometimes a reluctance for contact centers to do that because it's quite difficult, or it can be quite difficult depending on the organization and how open they are to collaborating and listening to that kind of feedback. It can be quite challenging to shift the needle. And those numbers that you gave about how quickly things were able to be resolved or be put in pipelines to be improved goes to show the impact that it can have when you take that approach. So that's definitely something that I would highlight there for any contact centers, because the other perennial problem contact centers have is, how do I demonstrate the value of what we do? How do people stop seeing us just as a cost center? And this is how you do it. You shine a light on the customer experience and give your people an opportunity to have their voices heard. You talked about that earlier, being seen and heard. I don't like to say it's a silver bullet, but it almost is. If you want to fix the problems that you're having in your contact center, this is a fantastic place to start, because it will have a pretty profound impact on almost everything. So hats off to you. It's fantastic.
One of my biggest bugbears in like contact centers is the focus on cost to serve. And I think cost to serve is a really blunt tool. I think it has its place, but I think it's sort of much like abandonment. It's held up as being like the one thing, when really it's just one of many things. It's like when we focus on one metric for costs in contact centers, we focus on cost to serve, just like when we focus on one metric in contact centers on customer experience, we focus on abandonment. And I think when you can shift that focus from cost to serve to your inquiry to transaction ratio, I think things get a lot more interesting. Because if you can say 5% of transactions result in an inquiry, you might say when the transactions go up, the cost will go up, but the cost to serve isn't going up. But equally, you can start to measure what you're deflecting. And you can't measure what you're deflecting with cost to serve, because that is literally about the inquiries that you serve. And that's where things start to get interesting with how you interact with the rest of the business, because you can say to them, they're putting a business case together to solve something. And they'll say to you, well, how much is that going to reduce cost to serve? And every person who leads a contact center says, don't you dare touch my cost to serve, right? And then things get tricky. But what you can then say is, well, what if we said instead that we're going to knock off 0.1% of the inquiry to transaction ratio, because actually we're going to deflect inquiries and we're not going to need to serve as many customers. That's a much more powerful tool. That is something that really puts you in a place where both sides are getting what they need out of the situation, and you're actually deflecting costs in the long term in a really sustainable way. So I think it's not just about having the conversations. It's about both sides of the equation having a really clear view on business cases that support these things. Because ultimately, like, yes, there will be low-hanging fruit, but there are going to be things where ultimately it's going to cost money to save money or make money. And you need to have a really clear understanding within your business about which metrics you're going after in order for that to not feel like one party loses in those situations.
I think the way that you've spoken about it there, moving away from singular focus on a metric, is the way to do it. Again, it's harder because you're then having to balance multiple different priorities, but the goal is to reveal what's happening in the system, and you can't do that if you're just looking at one thing. Yeah, so that's fantastic. Great insights and advice. Let's talk a bit about technology now, because I know that you guys are doing some pretty exciting stuff. Then in your time at Mecca, you've started to implement some AI. And tell us a little bit about Miss Mecca and the Einstein chatbot, because we understand that this had a pretty massive effect and reduced your chat abandonment by 75%, which is a big number. Tell us about that.
I will start by saying that Miss Mecca is not an AI bot. She is a pretty classic standard chatbot. She's a decision tree. And I think when we delivered Miss Mecca 2.5 years ago now, there wasn't really a big retailer in Australia that had a chatbot, and her impact was incredible. The market has changed. I mean, when you look at how technology has changed in contact centers in the past 12 months, it is astounding. And everyone, AI is the buzzwords, like on everyone's lips. Everything's AI. Every conference I'm invited to, anytime I'm asked to speak, everyone wants AI and everyone wants a case study.
Including us. That's what we just asked you.
Yeah. But what I am learning by being asked that question is, what an exciting space, because no one has a case study. The fact that we're all being asked for one and everyone's going, oh, crap, no one's got one, which means there is an opportunity there to be sort of first in that space. And we've got some really cool work that we're doing in that space. And I think that it's very early days, but I feel excited that there's an opportunity to do something that other people aren't doing. And I think very similar to how I think about what is important about my role and what we've talked about is that when we are looking at AI, we are looking at CX and EX. So we are going after both sides of the equation and we're saying, how do you use AI, yes, to better serve your customers, help them to self-serve, all of that kind of thing, but also how do you use AI to better serve your agents? How do you make sure that a team member has the information they need at their fingertips as a result of AI so they don't have to go searching? If you think about the world of beauty, coming from fashion retail into beauty was like a mind-blowing experience because you go from clothing that you put on your body that comes in different sizes, and that's about the variability of it. Sometimes something might leak dye onto someone's leather car seats. And that's about as serious as things get. But when you get into the beauty industry, you're talking about ingredients that people put on their skin. You know, people have reactions to things. People got different ingredients. You've got really, these days in skincare, incredible clinical ingredients in products. And so how do you make all of that information, all of that education, which Mecca is known for, the incredible education that we give to our team members on our products, how do you make that really easy and accessible? How do you use AI to help serve that information to team members, not only so that they can serve the customer faster, but when they're a new team member, it's easier to onboard and all of that kind of thing as well.
All right. Well, this has been a really great chat. So I do think we do need to wrap it up for you though. So Emma, we have two questions that we ask all of our guests at the end of the show. So number one, if you could change one thing about the contact center industry, what would it be?
I think one thing I would change about the contact center industry is not necessarily about it, the industry itself, but around how others view it. I often joke that I would love to go to a retail or digital conference or something and be the last speaker and stand up and say, everyone here who has just stood up and tried to sell you a piece of technology or whatever it might be, can I suggest for a much lower investment that you go spend a day with your contact center teams? Because all of these insights that you're willing to spend money to get are waiting for you in your contact centers. And I bet I could save you a bunch of money if you just go and spend a day with them. So I think it's about how businesses view the contact center. And I think as leaders, we have a responsibility for helping to change that. But equally, you know, I really want businesses to understand that there is a lot of value, a lot of information sitting in your contact center if you just go spend some time with them.
Sounds like you've got a keynote there of some sort that you should be sharing it with the world.
But that's it. That's the keynote. Go spend that's some time keynote. In your contact center. I'll give you 45 minutes back to go book
the Use that time. Lock yourselves in a room and solve all those issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you've just got yourself uninvited or taken off the list for any events moving forward because you ruined their business model, Emma.
They all know I pitch it every time.
All right. That's awesome, though. Great advice. Second question. If you had a crystal ball, what do you think the future of contact centers looks like?
Ooh, I think it's going to be an interesting, probably, I would say 3 to 5 years. I think that the interest in AI is going to do probably a couple of things. One, we're going to see some businesses, and maybe most businesses actually, swing really hard into the AI area. And I think there will be businesses who focus on AI as a way to reduce headcount and save money and all of that. And then there will be businesses who see it as an opportunity to increase the experience, make it better, all of that. I think in the short term, the ones who focus on the AI might see some wins. But in the long term, I think that the ones who focus on the team and the additional skills it can bring in will ultimately be the winners, because I actually think we're going to see a rebound from customers where they go from being really comfortable with the idea of AI to actually us swinging back into this world where everyone's like, you know what? Actually, I want to talk on the phone again. I want to talk to a real human. I actually don't want to go through a chatbot. Self-service is actually really boring and I don't feel connected. And then yes, there might be some industries where I'm fine. I don't have a deep emotional connection with my internet provider, but in businesses where I've really enjoyed the connection and the type of experience around this thing that I'm paying for, I want to have an experience as part of that. And I think we're going to see that rebound eventually.
I love that. This is a massive tangent, but I was watching The Mandalorian. I don't know if you've heard of it or seen it. That
Star I know Wars I haven't spin-off. Seen it.
And there was an episode where they were talking to all these robots, all these droids. There was this change happening where people were going back to, they were getting to get rid of these droids and going back to humans because of all the challenges with AI and they were becoming sentient, all these issues. And I thought, oh, that's really interesting. Maybe we will see this move back to human versus all this automation. So it's interesting that you had that, you've got that intuition as well. I mean, there's certainly areas over the pandemic where that became certainly true, where people, they needed trust in the interaction, particularly that they really favored voice channels, and that obviously created lots of demand issues for contact centers. But so I think there's definitely some signals that that's the case, that that may happen.
I think you see it every Christmas, you know, like the closer it gets to Christmas, the bigger a channel phone becomes, because the more urgent things are, the more you care, the more important it is to you, the more you want to speak to a human. Mm,
very true. Emma, thank you so much. What a great conversation. So many good insights. Highlights for me, I loved how you talked about the balance between EX and CX and the importance of understanding the needs of your people, because I think that it isn't, again, hopefully people don't take out of it that EX is the priority you should be focusing on, but it really is that balance, like getting into the hard work about finding that balance between the two, because they are so important to think about together. So thank you so much for your generosity and sharing everything that you have with us today. Hopefully this is just the first of many guest appearances on the pod.
Thanks for having me. It's been really fun.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Emma.
Thanks, everyone. Bye for now.
You've been listening to The Calling, your guide to leading modern contact centres.
This podcast is produced by Callow, where art and science come together to turn interactions into experiences.
If you're interested in how Callow can help you, head to our website at callowconsulting.com.au.
The Calling was produced with strategy and production support from Wavelength Creative.
So you don't miss an episode of The Calling, don't forget to subscribe to or follow the show in your podcast app. And please leave a 5-star review. It really helps others find the show. I'm Sean McGinn.
And I'm Arnie Ho. And we'll catch you next time on The Calling.